start again. So, hi everyone. This is Parent Talk hashtag with Bev. I am a Black British mother of West Indian descent with two children. I keep calling them my children, even though they're one's an adult now, definitely, and the other is approaching that. We are based in the London, UK. I'm not an expert in anything. I'm just sharing my thoughts, opinions, and experiences in the hope that it helps another parent somewhere or anyone. So I started an Instagram account called Bev Parent Talk. I know, you'll get used to it. I've had to switch the words around because things were taken. But this Instagram account has opened up a new door to lots of other people who are doing things out there. And through that, I have met up with a few people. And tonight or today, I am going to be doing yet another interview. I think that, you know, the whole point of the Parent Talk with Bev is to meet other parents who are doing phenomenal things and wonderful things in their community. And by having a chit chat and sharing, we're able to all learn something ourselves. So I'm just waiting for my guest to arrive, and then they will be able to introduce themselves and you will listen to us have a little bit of a chitter chatter. So go and get your beverages, or, you know, go for your walk and, you know, put the podcast on and listen and enjoy. So I'm here, I'm welcoming my guest. Her name is Donnell Grant. Hi, Donnell.
Hi, Bev. And thank you for having me today. I'm really excited and ready to do this. Thank you.
And we were having a bit of a gas off air about being mothers who are trying to do everything.
Literally.
We've got to take care. Yeah, and I know you're busy. I know. And I know I'm busy. But, you know, I love the quote that you were saying off air about we've got to listen to our bodies when they whisper.
So I was saying that basically, like, I've been doing a lot. I still work full time for a mental health advocacy charity. And I work for, I run my own business, The Brave Project, full time also. Mm-hmm. And I was saying that, you know, so I'm deciding that I need to kind of slow down, you know, bring on people to work for me, potentially for the business, because if you do not listen to your body when it whispers, what's going to happen is your body's going to scream and then it will be too late. So yeah, it's always good to listen to your body.
And that's such a powerful quote. That's why I wanted to capture it again, because I know that there's going to be other people who resonate with that. Well, for those of you who are joining us and listening, I did say that I started an Instagram account, and through that I've met this wonderful woman, Donnell, right? We've spoken before. We ain't met in the physical yet, but we got so much in common. And
100%.
One of the key things that we're talking about is the stigma around mental well-being. Uh-huh. Now, don't log off, people, because this is going to go wider. But I really felt that I wanted to give you some space, Donnell, to talk about, you know, what it's like being a mum, why you started the project, and what's it about. So give people a little bit of an introduction to who you are.
Okay, so thank you again, Beth, for allowing me to, for using your platform to talk about the things that I think are important to us parents, mm-hmm. especially when it comes to raising our children and their mental health and well-being. Mm-hmm. So me, I'm a 39-year-old mother of three children. I have a daughter who's 21, going to be 21.
You don't look like you're a 21-year-old. I'm telling you that now.
Well, do you know what people always say to me? I don't look like I've got a 21-year-old, but at the time when I had her, obviously I was a young mum, and, you know, obviously being a young mum, for those of you who've had children young, you know, there's so much stigma attached to it, but I, my kids are my life, they're my world, and I give every, I give thanks to God first of all, but to also to my children for the opportunities and for who I am today, you know. Mm. It has been a blessing, like having children young. Mm. I wouldn't say I recommend it to everybody, but if you do find yourself in that situation, you know, it's not the end. For me, it was the beginning. My children, they are my legacy, you know, and my kids are a testimony, testament for who I am today and what
so
I do.
So you've got your older daughter.
And so, yeah, so my older daughter, she's 21. And then I've got my 17-year-old son, Ashan. And Ashan has been featured actually on the Brave Project. He's provided a quote for a local newspaper. And he also appeared as a guest speaker on the show that we done this month. And so Ashi's doing his A-levels at the moment. And then I've got my youngest, Micah, who's 12. And he's the bigger, he's the baby. But yeah, so I've got, so, you know, some people would look and think, oh my gosh, wow, how is she doing it all? But my kids, I've raised them well, you know, they're extremely independent and I thank God they're doing well, you know, they listen, they're respectable children and they help me with my business as well. Do you know what I mean? They inspire me. The conversations that I have with them about the world, they help me to see the world through their eyes, especially the boys, because obviously it's different for boys than it is for girls.
Everybody keeps telling me that.
Yeah, I know you've only got girls, right?
I've got two girls, and yeah, my one is like your son. She's 17, going to be 18 in June.
Yeah.
And preparing for the end of her A-levels after this lockdown
period. Oh, yeah.
So, you know, mental well-being has been important. But also, you met my eldest, who just surprised me.
Enough. Yeah.
But, you know, you know, I said to her, like, you need, I'm advising you to get some counselling because you're on your own living in a different area, you're not surrounded by family, and we're going through COVID. And I'm blessed that she listened and got herself some support. You know what I mean?
Yeah, good.
You know what I mean? So I think you're right. Our kids, you know, they are inspiring us. We see things through the lens, and also helping us, each of us, because Instagram, boy, I don't know some of the lingo, you know, what to do, but it's brilliant. We've got people, you know, we've got our family, children.
I mean, obviously the children make sure that they keep their mum, you know, young at heart. And obviously fashion wise and stuff like that, I look to my daughter, Cheyenne. You know, she makes sure that her mum always looks the part.
On fleek,
yeah. You know they've got their terms. Micah, obviously the youngest, he doesn't want me to embarrass him. Yeah, whereas Ashan's like the free spirits. He's like, Mum, whatever you want to do, I love you. If you think it looks nice, you know. So we have to have a balance. Obviously, all your children cannot be the same, but they all come together and they make up the package that are my kids. So
So you intimated, you know, you talked about something called the Brave Project. So you intimated there, you know, your middle child, your son, has been interviewed and stuff like that. For those people who aren't on Instagram and don't know what the Brave Project is about, can you just give us a clue?
So I always wanted to give back to my local community that I was raised in, which is the London Borough of Newham. Mm-hmm. I've more or less lived in Newham all my life. Mm. And for those that know Newham, you know, there is a lot of deprivation in Newham, socially and economically, you know, but there's so much good that has come from the borough. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure what it was that I was going to do, but I've always sort of worked in social care, you know, trained as a holistic coach, as a reflexologist. I started my training and worked in mental health for on and off, I'll say about 10 years, sort of within care homes, and more recently as for an advocacy charity. Mm-hmm. So I attended a an event at the mayor's office. I think it was September 2019, and it was for World Suicide Day. Mm. And they were talking about London's initiative to sort of prevent suicide, and they spoke about suicide in depth. But one of the things they didn't really kind of touch on was the how suicide impacted the Black and ethnic minority community. Mm. They spoke about young people, but not the they didn't delve into like the statistics and stuff like that.
Right.
So I went away, and literally I actually had a dream.
Right.
That I started up the Brave Project. Woke up in the middle of the night, got my phone out, wrote the name, the Brave Project.
Wow.
Wrote down who would be involved, who the ambassadors will be, the partners will be, like, you know, what I'll be doing, mm-hmm. The events and so on. And then told my sister about it. But then obviously being a single mom and having a property mortgage and bills, I did was I parked it, you know, because I had to focus on a full-time job and all of my responsibilities that I had. Then the pandemic came, and obviously the stress, I could see how important it was to do something like the Brave Project. Mm-hmm. I could see how the pandemic had adversely affected young people. I spoke to my mum about it, you know, about doing the project, and I said, you know what, I really want to do this, but it seems like quite a big thing to do, like I'm not sure if it's in me, if it's too much work. And she said to me, you know what, if not you, who? And my mum's always been like my advisor, my mentor, my guide. She's my rock.
Yeah.
So, and she always encourages me to like reach, to step out of my comfort zone. Mm. There's nothing, my mum basically talked to me like I'm untouchable, you know, like I can do anything. Mm. So I thought, you know what, I've always, in the past, I've set up businesses, whether it's holistic business, arts business. So I had the business skills, and I'd worked in mental health for a number of years. So I thought, you know, all of the information and advice that I've gained, mm-hmm. I'm now going to use that to do something for my community, for young men. So I then decided to start up the Brave Project, which is a suicide prevention and wellbeing service for young, but it was for young Black men.
Yeah.
And then I thought, you know what, within our community, I could see that men from the BAME community, so ethnic minorities, also have equally struggle with mental health, and the stigma is mm-hmm. also is there within those communities as well.
Of course.
So that's why I then kind of partway through, I decided to have for the BAME community.
Yeah.
And what the aims was for, the reason why I started up the Brave Project was because I wanted to provide a safe space for young men to be able to speak about their feelings and emotions without any fear of judgment,
mm-hmm.
and to be able to reach out and ask for help when they needed it.
Yeah.
Now, when I looked at other amazing suicide and mental health charities, what I noticed, and obviously from research, that because of lack of representation, unfortunately, our young men who unfortunately are at a higher risk of suicide, they are missed out in early intervention because of stigma and so on, and the judgment, and because the lack of cultural representation. Mm-hmm. So what happens is they end up going into mental health institutes like hospitals and stuff. So literally they enter the system at a crisis state. Or sometimes they're picked up in the youth justice system.
Yeah.
And by that time it's too late, you know?
Hang on a minute, this cat is...
That
is barling. I don't know if you can hear it, but I let me just
open it. I can't hear nothing.
Because I'm trying to talk to you and this cat is just going, and it's like a dewy meeting. It's like hearing a child cry.
I thought it'd be your cat or be one of mine at the back.
But no, I think what I'm touched by in your story is, and it's not your story, it's your experience, right?
Yeah.
One, that you had a dream. So
yeah,
yeah, yeah, something in the core of you moved you. See, look, moved you to wake up and to capture. Yeah. And sometimes as mothers, we're kind of, or as parents, we can be so busy that we miss those opportunities.
Yeah.
Also, the fact that so many of us can go to things and we can hear stuff, but it's the bravery or the courage, or it could be the conviction that moves you to still want to do something about it that I'm hearing.
Yeah.
And also what I'm really loving is that your mum has faith in you, believes in you.
100%,
not a lot of people have got that kind of backing of their parents. You know what I mean? It's an uphill struggle without our parents actually sort of saying, actually, you know what, whatever you put your mind to, you can do it. If not you, who? And you heard that, you know?
Yeah, so- I did. I heard that. And I mean, I've worked in all sorts of industries and backgrounds, from corporate, retail, you know, worked in the public service and private sector, it doesn't matter how much experience that I had, but I think the fact that my mum is my everything, and I knew that if anything was to go wrong, if I felt that I couldn't continue, I'd always get the backing of my mum, you know?
Right.
So I could always go back and refer to her, and I always go to her for courage and support, and that she's my mum's my go-to person. She is my counselor, you know. I mean, that's what I say to people, especially with when it comes to when we provide support and help in the Brave Project. So one of the things that we provide, we do wellbeing workshops.
Okay.
And last year October we launched the workshops. We did two workshops in the North London prison.
Mm-hmm.
And it was with men, I'd say from age 18 upwards.
Okay.
We do work with younger men, and that is our main age group. So from men aged, say, 15 to up to 24.
Okay, yeah.
But in the prison, obviously, that particular, it was an adult prison. So the men were aged 18 and upwards. And from different backgrounds, mostly ethnic minority, you know, so Black and Asian young men. And what we did was, I went into the prison to do a journaling workshop with them for the Brave Project, to basically show them, you know, ways that they can talk about their feelings mm-hmm. without fear of judgment. And it's a safe space.
Yeah, yeah.
Within the journals, I created the affirmations and I held the affirmations up for them when guiding them through the journaling experience.
Right.
And so, for instance, one of our cards would say, I'm allowed to speak about my feelings without fear of judgment, or I'm allowed to be heard, you know, or I'm allowed to say how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
And through those conversations, or through those affirmations, then it will evoke certain conversations.
Yeah.
And then some of the men will say, you know, well, no, I don't feel like that's me, or within this prison, we're not allowed to say how we feel, or I do feel like another number. And then we would go back to their experiences as a child
mm-hmm.
from maybe raising up, you know, some of them were raised with both parents, some were raised in single parents,
mm-hmm.
and would speak about, you know, how they felt society looked at them, or, you know, some of them would use the term, I've been taught that I have to man up, or I had to be the man of the house. Yeah. My mum didn't say that, but that's how I felt.
Yeah.
You know,
there's too many of us taking more responsibilities than we're emotionally ready for.
You know, and I think obviously as a Black female Caribbean, I understand some of the I understand why these young men or the men said the things they did, because obviously I've got a brother, you know, and uncles and so on, and I remember certain conversations, you know, subconsciously. I know it's not deliberate that parents say to our children, or, you know, you have to man up, or stop crying and all these sort of things, but it's so damaging. It's not something that I'd say to my children, because I know better.
Yeah.
And I've seen the after effects of these young, when men are told that they can't, they're not supposed to cry, and they have to man up and stuff like that. I always actively make it my business to speak to my children about how they feel, even about how I feel.
Okay.
Because I want to show them that, as well as I want them to be vulnerable, I have to show them that I'm allowing myself to be vulnerable as well. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, listen, girlfriend, that is one of the hardest.
Yeah.
I remember when my relationship with my children's father ended, and I remember my mum had sort of told me to go to church, and I was like, because I love you, mum, I'm going, but I ain't really feeling this. But when I went, the vicar was talking about something, and I broke down and started crying. And I remember thinking about whether or not I should break down and cry, even though that's what I wanted to do. You know what I mean? And then, because I was thinking, what am I showing my kids? You know, am I showing them that I'm weak? Am I showing them that I'm not coping? And I should be showing them 100%. That I'm coping, but I'm not coping.
Yeah.
And I remember my little one, the baby, she put her hand to me on my back, and she was like, it's all right, what, mum, it's all right, it's all right. And I was like, I need to just cry. I need to let it out. And then after I'd let it out, and then we were coming home, I explained to them that sometimes that's what you need to do. You need to be able to break down and allow yourself to break down and know that you've either got someone you can talk to, or someone's got your back. And if no one's got your back, like at that time, I didn't think anybody had my back. I knew that God, I was searching for God to have my back, to help me. You understand?
Yeah.
But I had to think about whether or not I should let them see me cry. And then once I'd done that, it was more easier to be vulnerable.
I think we've got
an issue, because people think that as Black women, we just got to be strong. And that can't be. So you're really teaching.
Yeah.
You're really teaching your kids,
and
allowing yourself to grow.
Yeah, it's true, you know. And I think sometimes, as Black women, unfortunately, especially sometimes single mothers as well, we do have no choice but to be strong, because obviously you're raising the children. Sometimes the father's not around. Sometimes they are around. But even so, when you're in the house with the children on your own, you know, you end up taking on a lot of the responsibility naturally. You feel like you've got to be strong all the time. And then there comes a point in your life when you realize, I don't know how not to be strong. So, but sometimes it's other people around you that will kind of identify that. And hopefully it would be the right people that who you mean a lot to, you know, people who love you, who care for you, and who have your best interests at heart. And then you listen, you know, because a lot of people say, you know, I'm an empath and I've got a quite soft nature, but I believe because of some of the circumstances that I've been through, being a young mother, and you know, that has come with some adversities and obviously lots of positive stuff, but it's at times it does harden you, because you feel like, you know, you always got to be in kind of autopilot, you know, or you always got to put your best foot forward, and
you can't be seen to be weak, be affected by the things that are impacting you on the outside. But how do we teach our kids if we can't model?
This is the thing. I mean, that is one of the reasons why I love your page, Bev. You know, you keep it real, and you allow us parents, you know, who are co-parenting, people who have both parents in the house, and also single parents, that it's okay. You know, we don't always have to have our cape on all the time, you know? You know, like literally take off, and you can see the S on my chest. I always have to be showing that. Sometimes I'm allowed to have down days. Sometimes I'm allowed to have days when I don't want to get out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's normal and it's okay.
Yeah, it is okay, because, you know, at the end of the day, we're human, okay? We're human, and we are we don't have a journal, right, that tells a manual. I mean, I remember when I was studying and they were talking about child development, Piaget and Freud and all of, and all the rest of them. And I was like, okay, there's some things that are generic. I can understand some of
this. 100%. Okay? We talk for my parents, yeah?
Yeah, I can understand. I can understand that. But there are things that are cultural that that impact those things. You know, not everybody sits neatly in a box.
Yeah, 100%. So yeah.
If I don't sit neatly in that box and I can't identify with you, then what hope is there for me? What am I going to do? You understand? And that's and I think that's where some of the things I have struggled with. That's why it comes out in some of the posts that I create. Because you know, if I don't give myself permission for it not to be okay, and I'm not going to be in charge of my healing either.
100%, yeah.
So
I think, see, I think with when it comes to me showing my children about vulnerability so that they know it's okay to be vulnerable, one of the examples I can give you, like, so about, I say, 2 months ago, I had had an extremely heavy week, and it was one of those weeks. And I think I just broke down. I was in tears. And my son, Ashan, the middle one, he came up to me and said, "Mom, are you right?" Like, no, he didn't see me crying, but he could see that I wasn't myself.
Yeah.
And he said, "Mom, what's up?" I said, I cried today. Mm. He said, and he was playing his PlayStation at the time. He literally switched off the PlayStation, put the controller down. He said, "Talk to me. What happened?"
Wow.
And I thought, you're 17 and you've given me space. You're holding space for me.
Yeah.
And I thought, I did this. I've allowed, like, I was like, wow, this is phenomenal that my son is holding space for me. And he gave me a hug. He said, "Mom, don't worry, everything's going to be all right." So I just told him, you know what, work's been a bit heavy this week, and I've got lots of stuff that I'm trying to do and achieve at the moment. And yeah, it was just one of those weeks, but it was quite an emotional one. So being able to speak to him and the way he responded to me, I felt comforted. And do you know what I mean? I thought, wow, my son is actually, he listened, he stopped. And if for all parents out there, you know, this whole computer business, these children, they're in love with their PlayStations and games consoles and whatever. So the fact that he mobile phone, you know, all digital, social media, you know, this is what kids are really tuned into at the moment. But he actually stopped what he was doing and said, "Talk to me." He gave me his full attention, you know. He provided, he held space for me. You know, it's almost like
that's what you're doing for your children. That's what you're doing as part of your charity. That's what you're encouraging for young men and young boys to take space and to look at the things that are, you know, to their feelings and to learn to be able to express that. And it's not a weakness, but it's a strength.
No. Yeah. I always say, you know what? So the post that we put out there, we talk about, you know, we promote positivity throughout our page, and we create social media posts that will impact and influence change.
Yeah.
And we want to obviously show the young men out there and parents, carers, and, you know, organizations that are not really maybe talking about it, that it's okay to speak about your mental health and well-being. And so far we've had so much positive feedback from young people that have said, and who actually have come to us for support, or we've had relatives who've come to us about their men in their life who are, you know, going through a hard time and need some advice. So what we do is we signpost them. And that's because we're not a crisis support. We provide signposting, and we do the wellbeing workshops. But they say our social media page is very approachable. And because of all of the posts that we put out there, there's a true representation of the young men that we're trying to provide support for. So, well, you know, yeah, they look
sorry to cut you. I was attracted to what you were saying because I'm on the Mental Health South London and Maudsley Mental Health Task Force. So I'm working, and we've been doing a piece of work of listening to Londoners in South London, over 6,000 people we've listened to about the things that are happening for that, you know, that's impacting their mental well-being.
I think
one of my first Instagram things was the stigma that is there just for us to even talk about mental well-being prevents us from healing. And you know, when I looked up the definition of stigma, it was like having a disgraceful mark. And I was like, there's nothing disgraceful about our mental well-being. And so when I was looking through your posts, you know, I was like, now this is the same. I mean, I'm not a mental health specialist, you know, I'm more about, I'm eclectic. But when I looked through your IG, I was like, I need to follow this page. I need to reach out and get to this person, because the work that you're doing, or that you're, the work you are doing, the work that you will be doing in the future,
is
so significant. I don't think, I'm on the outside as part as well being in the inside, but I'm on the outside looking at what you're doing, at your posts. And I'm like, this is phenomenal. The work, allowing space.
Yeah.
It's free.
Yeah.
You know, we got to make a living, right? But sending out the message that it's okay.
Yeah.
And that there's a space here, and I'm going to guide you through these workshops, and I'm going to signpost you to where you can get support.
Yeah.
Phenomenal, girlfriend. It's phenomenal.
Do you know, the thing is, I was and have been doing signposting through the organization that I work for. And I enjoy my job. But it's not my baby. It's not my passion. Mm-hmm. And I thought, if I can do something that I'm not passionate about, but obviously everybody has to make a living.
Yeah.
Imagine how good I can do something that I'm passionate about. Mm. So when I initially set up the Brave Project, I never ever set it up to make money.
Yeah.
You know, and we're not making any money.
We're a non-profit.
We're non-profit, but I never looked at, oh, the potential of funding or anything like that. Mm-hmm. All I wanted to do was I wanted to save lives.
Yeah,
that was my goal, was to save lives and alleviate suffering, because as an empath and a person that I worked within mental health as well, I worked within the mental health units within, North London, and also within Hillingdon before doing the role I'm doing now.
Yeah.
So I could see an insight how the effects, you know, and obviously there was an overpopulation of Black and Asian, Black and ethnic minority men within those mental institutes, you know what I mean? Those hospitals and within the communities, and also having family members around me that have also experienced, you know, mental health crisis.
I'm one of them.
You know what I mean? I think at some point, all of us, if we're honest, have accessed mental health support. It could be like through our local talking therapies, maybe private counselling, or, you know, through the church.
Mm-hmm.
There's all counselling and therapy comes in all sorts of shapes and forms.
Yeah.
And I think the most important thing is to access it. Yeah. And I think with our men, unfortunately, they're not accessing any of it. So they're not accessing the counselling through the mum, the sister, the dad, sometimes even the schools, unfortunately, because they don't understand how to talk to our young men, because the cultural barriers, they're not able to reach them, you know, and so on. They don't speak the same language, you know.
And plus sometimes, you know, because I've worked in education and I remember being in class.
Yeah.
And I'm working with the same students that other teachers are working with.
Yeah.
And they're saying to me how these kids are problematic. And I'm like, not in my class, there's no problems.
Right.
So what's the difference? The difference is that it's the environment that you create and the expectation that you have. you know?
Yeah,
and so,
yeah.
you know, when I would talk to a certain young man, you know, it wasn't that I needed to know the street lingo and everything like this.
No.
But it was a case of I was open to listen.
Yeah, yeah.
Without judgment. And, you know, some of the teachers, they already had it in their mind that, oh, well, it's a behavior issue. And they focus on doing behavior rather than dealing with what could be the root cause. Yeah.
And this is, parents, this is.
Some parents ignore certain things. And you think it's behavior. Oh, you're disrespectful. You know, listen to me and I want to do what I'm telling you.
Yeah.
When in actual fact, there could be more. But if we're not able to have an open conversation with our own kids, then how do you expect the schools to listen? A lot of the things that I do, because I support parents, and it is about helping parents to speak the language that's required for the school to hear what you're saying. Yeah,
and
guiding you through, there is a process, so there are procedures, because you never read their policies and their procedures. Part of the reason you don't know what the school is accountable for. You let them
know the book. And this is why I became, when my middle son Ashan, in fact, he was in year five, I became I became a school governor. And at his school, primary school, and as a result of that, I think I mentioned to you before when we spoke, as a result of that, I took him out of the school at year five, and he didn't do his year six. So when he was supposed to be going to year six, he skipped year six and went to year seven. Because he was identified as gifted from, I think, year two, so I don't know if that's age eight. But the school were holding him back. But if I wasn't a school governor, I wouldn't have known what was going on inside the school. Mm-hmm. And also there was a black teacher at the time who approached me. She said, she told me how phenomenal my son was and she encouraged me to, I told her what my plans was and she encouraged me to do that. But the head teacher of the school, for his own reasons, he said he wasn't advising me to take my son out of school. It's the best thing I could have done. At the age of, I think, 10, my son, he had the IQ of a university graduate, but the school weren't having a bar of it, you know. And he's just excelled. It's important for us as parents, we are so involved when it comes to our children's schooling. I'm not saying that education wise, that having to sit down and do the homework, because obviously some of us have left school a long time before. So, you know, when it comes to maths and English and that, those are not really my subjects, but I will ask them if they need any support. And if they can't get support, I will get tutors or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But in terms of teaching them to have an active role, be vocal about how they feel about school, with their emotions around school, and what they want to do after school, during school, you know, showing them how to take the lead and showing them. I said, we've always said, myself and the children's father, you know, we're phenomenal parents. We always guided our children together. Mm-hmm. Anything you want to do, you know, you can do. Mm-hmm. You just need to tell us, you know, if the teacher's not supporting you to do this subject or helping you to find out about post 16 education, then come back and talk to us. But you need to speak up.
Yeah. I'm conscious of time, you know, because you and I could natter.
Don't be sorry,
because I think you're really speaking some things that some parents need to hear. You know, for me, when my post was made redundant, I used to work for a college, and the post was made redundant, so I had an option to either reapply for some other program division manager job or whatever. And I said no. And that was the best thing that I did, because I was available to be around my kids in secondary
school. Yeah.
And a lot of parents, they think that they've got to pay a lot of attention to primary 100%. School.
Yeah.
And when their kids start able to get on bus and go to school by themselves, they somehow believe that they don't need to be involved. And I was one of those. Things intervened.
Yeah.
And I realize now, because my last one is coming out of at A levels.
Yeah.
the most important years are as their teenagers. I was a parent, because in my job, you know, I'm a family support worker, and just the other week I had a parent contact me and basically was going into one about the fact that her son needed some help. And I went off to do some bit of mentoring with this young man. And he wants to be an architect.
Bless him,
So he's a bright young spark.
Mm.
What the school has done to secure its grades has put him in foundation papers.
Now, that old chestnut. Just in case he doesn't do well, then they don't.
So for those parents who don't understand, in your GCSEs, there's a higher paper and there's a foundation paper. Yeah. In the foundation paper, the highest grade that you can get is a C. Whether your child is capable of getting an A, it doesn't matter, because once they're put in the foundation tier GCSE, the highest grade they can get is a C. Now, the problem is that you're going to be happy they're going to get a C because they're past it. But if he wants to be an architect, or if you want to be the universities are looking at your GCSEs, not your A-levels, they're looking at your GCSEs. And if you're, and they're looking for higher tier papers. Now, what do you think is going to happen to this youth? Yeah? When he finds out that because he's got the wrong level of GCSE, he's either got to resit, or if a university accepts him, he's going to be thinking that he wasn't good enough. But he's been allowed access in.
Now, that's
not good for your mental health. Your mental health.
No.
You know, he's bright. He is a bright boy. But anyway, you know, he's going to get mentored and things are going to happen for him.
Yeah.
But that's a very important point
that
you mentioned around, and kudos to you for being brave to take him, to make that decision to take him out of the school. That wasn't an easy decision, I'm sure.
It wasn't an easy decision, but I had from year two, from the age of eight, it was just to niggle at me because I knew he was bright and I thought, I need to do more. You know, he ain't in the right place. And then obviously you start to get a little bit bored in school. Mm. And there's certain things happen. I said, you know what? I'm going to do it. But as a result of going through that situation, I've always encouraged my children and seeked opportunities for them and for other kids around us. So for instance, my first two, the two oldest one, they've done university tester weekends, you know, like when go to university like for the weekend or for the week, to experience what it's like, you know. They've done extracurricular activities, like, you know, for gifted kids and like just for kids within the community. So when my children were in secondary school, I would always, if I had access to it, would give the secondary school opportunities that would come my way. But for the other children, you know, it doesn't matter what race the kids were. And on our page now, if I see any opportunity for the BAME children, you know, that's what I'm putting across the page, because I find within our community, unfortunately, we don't have access to all of these opportunities, and our children can do the same, if not better, than their white counterpart. It's just knowing what's out there.
And that is the thing. We haven't learnt the art of networking. I'm a chair for Parent Power South London, and we have a WhatsApp group. And in that group, the only thing that we're really allowed to share is opportunities, so that for our children, so that parents, whether it applies to you or not, if there's an apprenticeship, if there's a summer school, if there's
hired
for certain age groups where you can get paid, whatever that's available, we put that in that group just to extend people's knowledge. about what is available. And there's a lot available, and not everybody can research everything because we don't have time. We're working and we're trying to live and pay the bills. So if before we kind of wrap up, what one thing is it that you want to achieve, let's say for the next 5 years with regards to the charity that you've set up, the Brave Project? What one thing do you think that you want to, the vision that you want to achieve for the next 5 years?
So other than obviously what we already are doing, which is to create culturally appropriate campaigns that influence change, we want to continue to deliver our wellbeing workshops, and not obviously just in prisons, but within the community. So youth to youth groups, within schools, also within within schools and through the criminal justice system as well. But most importantly, I'd like it to be a government agenda to the government's problem, not just at a grassroots level.
Yeah.
And I think that is where the issue lays, is unfortunately with our sort of grassroots charities and organizations, when funding finishes, it's almost like that's where we stop.
Yeah.
And for me, you can clearly see the stats stating that the young Black and Asian men, or Black men, young Black and African and Caribbean men in particular, are higher risk of suicide. Now, if that's not enough for the government to wake up and identify our organization as, you know, something that needs to be part of, you know, the NHS plan or whatever plan they have when it comes to suicide prevention, then I don't know what is. But in the meantime, before they, even if they don't decide, I'm still going to continue to do that work. You know, we want other, we're looking for ambassadors in the summer. We're going to start recruiting ambassadors so that they can talk about the work that we're doing within the Brave Project, because I cannot do this on my own. Obviously, I've got a lot of support around me, friends and family and people like yourselves and other organizations who are, you know, we're partnering up with, you know, working, collaborating. But our ambassadors, you know, will continue to do that work for us as well. And, you know, we would like to also open up a wellbeing center. A wellbeing center so that, obviously, if young men do not want to speak to us through social media or make that phone call, which has been identified when it comes to accessing care and support, a lot of young Black and Asian men, they won't necessarily pick up the phone and make that call about their health and wellbeing, or dial in or text in.
So but, if anybody's listening to this, which not if anybody, people will be listening.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've mentioned suicide, which is...
Yeah.
Where would you want to, do you have a number that you want to put out?
So at the moment we're on social, we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter. We can be reached on Twitter. We can be reached on Instagram. We can also be reached on Facebook, and we have an email address. We do have a telephone number, and that telephone number is on our Facebook, I believe.
Okay.
The only people usually that call our number, it's for organizations, but because we're not a crisis support, so the number isn't available for young people. Perhaps maybe in the future we will have people that will be manning the line, so if young people want to speak to us, they can do, but it's mostly through work that we do in the community, and that's how they connect with us.
Right. I looked on your IG. You've got a post for a company called Papyrus.
Yes. So Papyrus. Sorry, I can never pronounce the name. They're a suicide prevention charity for young people under age 35.
Yeah.
And those are just one of the organisations that we signpost our young people to. There are many others also.
Go on. I know that Samaritans is a hotline, okay?
Yeah.
And I'll put that in the description. But I did take the telephone number of Papyrus for their hope line.
So there's also Shout as well.
Shout,
and you've got Koof as well.
Right. Okay. Can I give out the telephone number for Hope Line, which is 0800. So it's 0800 068 4141. That is the Hope Line, one of the numbers that you can, if you really speak to somebody after listening to the things that we've been talking about, and anything resonates with you and you really need to reach out, the number is, it's Papyrus, and their Hope Line is 0800, that's 0800 068 4141. So you're looking for ambassadors, you want to be on the government agenda, you want to be one of the signpost resources, maybe as part of the NHS, especially in the local area, and you want to do some more well-being, you want to open up your own well-being centre. I'm just throwing those all out there because somebody somewhere is listening, and if anybody can support the Brave Project and what they're doing, their IG is the_Brave Project, all one word. And they are on Twitter, the Brave Project Community Interest Company. You can find them by putting that, all of that in, and they will come up as the Brave Project CIC.
Brilliant.
You mentioned Facebook, which was the Brave Project as well. It's just look under Facebook and put the Brave Project. You will be able to find Donnell charity there. And in the description that comes with this, I will put the links to people to be able to contact you.
Yeah, I'll provide you with all of our social media details. Please feel free to inbox us on Instagram. I noticed that a lot more people feel more comfortable communicating on Instagram. If you do need any help, support, advice, encouragement, guidance, signposting, you can contact me. I'm the one who's manning these social media accounts at the moment. And, you know, within, say, 24 hours or sometimes within an hour, I can respond to you and provide you with the support and encouragement that you need.
So, you know, thank you so much, Donnell, for taking time out of your busy schedule to come speak to me and to the listeners as well. I really appreciate it. Before you
thank go, you, Beth.
Is there something that you haven't said or one message that you want to give to those who are listening?
I think there's so many things that I could say, but one of the things I would say to parents, which I'd always say, is tonight, tell your children that you love them and hug your kids, because there's so much power in a hug, you know, just touching your children and embracing them and telling them, obviously, that you love them, you know, because those are the words that our children need to hear. And I think sometimes we are busy as parents, you know, work and life and whatever, but we need to tell our children that we love them, you know, and hug them. And that is what I'd say. That is from parents or guardians or young people. Doesn't even need to be your children. Some of us, you know, we have other relatives, young relatives that live with us and whatever. Especially within our community, we have, you know, blended extended families and stuff like that. It doesn't mean even if it's not the child that you birthed them, you still can hug that child, man. Just show that child love, you know, and that is what our kids need. Our kids need love.
Thank you, Donnell, for taking the time, as I said. And also, I just want to say thank you to the listeners. You know, this has been a longer podcast than normal, but you know, I'm sure that you have really enjoyed listening to Donnell and the work that she's doing. If you're able to reach out and assist her in the projects and her visions for the future, then please look at the links that are going to be available for you to contact her on. But again, if you want to check her out on the IG, she's on the_Brave Project. And it is definitely Instagram worth looking at and directing your young people to as well. If you're finding it difficult to have that conversation, at least create the space. So thanks for listening, and take care of yourselves and your families. And until next time, we are out. Oh, it's not been.